For 50 years, movies have been imagining how talking robots and computers would sound. But when machines actually started to talk, their voices were like nothing we'd ever heard. Our linguist Jeff Nunberg thinks that's because we have trouble imagining how truly unhuman machines really are.
According to a legend, the first talking machine was invented by Roger Bacon, the 12th century scientist and polymath that the medievals called Dr. Mirabilis. After 7 years' labor, Bacon fashioned a brazen head to hold philosophical discourses with. According to an Elizabethan version of the story, the head was awakened one day by Bacon's inept servant. "Time is," it said. When the servant asked what it meant, the head responded, "Time was." The servant became vexed and insisted that the head explain itself. "Time is past," it said, at which point a hand with a hammer appeared and broke it into 1,000 pieces. The story doesn't say anything about what sort of voice the brazen head had, brassy, I'd imagine. It wasn't until the advent of talking pictures that people began to give machines voices of their own. There's a curious catch-22 to that exercise. The point is to convey the machine's singular lack of humanity, but the only way to do that is by giving it a voice that connotes some uniquely human deficiency of personality. The progenitor of the breed was Robbie the Robot, who stole the show in the 1956 sci-fi classic Forbidden Planet. Robbie was the cinema's first lovable robot. He looked like a metallic Michelin man and spoke in a ponderous monotone like a butler who was trapped inside a garbage can.
"That is correct, sir. For your convenience, I am monitored to respond to the name Robbie."
Robbie's voice had a vaguely fey note that other movie robots were never able to duplicate. But his affectlessness was the model for the talking machines in dozens of movies and TV shows to follow, from Lost in Space to Doctor Who to The Jetsons to Star Trek. The pitch and tempo might vary, but the robot drone was always the same.
"Exterminate all humans!"
"I am sorry, Will Robinson. I am afraid I goofed."
"I am a machine vastly superior to humans.
Shall we play a game?"
"Back to work. Back to work. Everybody. Work, 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 work. Work, work."
"Program complete. Enter when ready."
"I'll be back."
After a while, other movies started playing variations on that theme. In 2001, Stanley Kubrick modulated the traditional robot monotone into a preternaturally calm voice that suggested a paranoid's hyper-rationality. Hal talked the way Mr. Rogers would if he became a facilitator for a New Age cult.
"I know that you and Frank were planning to disconnect me, and I'm afraid that's something I cannot allow to happen."
Then there was the lugubrious robot Marvin from the BBC version of Douglas Adams' Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. In his case, the low affect voice was a sign of chronic depression.
"Sorry, did I say something wrong? Pardon me for breathing, which I never do anyway, so I don't know why I bother to say it. Oh, God, I'm so depressed."
The voices of other movie robots didn't suggest an absence of emotion so much as emotional immaturity. In the 1986 film Short Circuit, the robot Johnny Five speaks with the adenoidal Jerry Lewis voice that connotes the prototypical dweeb.
"Need input. I have questions, queries."
But however they speak, movie robots and computers always convey their lack of humanity in familiarly human tones. That's what drama requires, of course, whether the machines are cast as villains, heroes, or sidekicks. But none of those movie machines prepared us for how deeply weird machines would actually sound when they acquired voices of their own. The early speech synthesis systems had otherworldly voices that were barely comprehensible.
"For your convenience, I am monitored to respond to the name Robbie."
Granted, speech engineers have made a lot of progress since then, particularly in rendering the timbre of the human voice. Here's a state-of-the-art synthesizer from AT&T.
"For your convenience, I am monitored to respond to the name Robbie."
You can count on hearing a lot more voices like that in the future. If the engineers have their way, speech technology is going to go a long way to taking high-maintenance humans out of the customer service loop. But as good as they've gotten, computer voices are still patently unhuman. Whatever personality disorder they're suffering from, it isn't anything you'll find in DSM-3. There are two problems in getting robot voices right. The first is that their words don't mean anything to them. The second is that they don't know what their words mean to their listeners. They don't know what tone to take when they're telling you something. When you call to complain about your phone bill, you don't want the computer to tell you the bad news in an upbeat voice.
I'm sorry, you'll have to pay another installation fee.
Now, I'm sure that even as we speak, there's a team at AT&T or Carnegie Mellon working on the problem of computer abjection. But getting tone right isn't just a matter of synthesizing intelligence. Voice is the sound that the mind makes when it scrapes against the body. You can hear that in the awkward rhythms and transitions of machine speech, which suggests just how hard it is to mimic the moist ballistics of the human tongue. But it takes more than an artificial mouth to infuse a voice with warmth or sympathy or contrition. Emotion comes from lower down than that. You have to suggest the rest of the body, too. That ups the ante considerably. Artificial intelligence has always been a game of deception, but up to now it's been limited to creating the illusion that there's a working mind at the other end of the line. Now we may have to deal with machines that can sound as if they had chests and shoulders, too. Imagine trying to talk to a computer at the bank that sounds like a harried middle-aged service rep hunched over his terminal in the seventh hour of his shift. It's an unnerving prospect. You might yearn for a hand with a hammer to appear out of nowhere.
This conversation can serve no purpose anymore. Goodbye.
Jeff Nunberg is a linguist at the Xerox Palo Alto Research Center and the author of the new book, The Way We Talk Now. This is Fresh Air.